This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Get 24/7 instant access to over 400 criminal law e-lectures and more with a subscription to the MCLE Online Pass. Learn more at www.mcle.org/onlinepass. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
The case that the judge is referring to is Chief of Police of Taunton versus Karras, and it's in my materials. My materials are base stamped, the electronic package that you receive at page 82 of my Bates stamp is that case. And it does stand for the proposition that the licensing authority, the chief of police in the municipality, the city or town, has a tremendous amount of discretion. And so if you're practicing, one of the things that you do is you recognize that that licensing authority is your court of first resort. You have to convince the chief of police or the licensing officer in the town where that license is to be issued that your guy is not a problem, and that his career isn't going to be over because he gives a license or an FID card to your client, whatever that is. One argument that I found is, as we said, 30A is a 30A is a tough nut, a sort of sloppy 30A in the district court is more difficult still, and the discovery process under 30A is supposed to be very regimented. The Superior Court judges go through it all the time. There's no discovery in a 30A beyond the record that's produced without a variety of motions that have to be filed and approved by the judge in order to add discovery to that record. Because that's true, one of the arguments that I have found works and works without having to get a decision from the court is that one thing that the municipality is not allowed to do, no matter how you read the statute and no matter how much discretion you give the licensing authority, one thing they can't do is delegate. And if the decision hinges on the decision of someone else, and I had a case where the licensing authority said, we're going to revoke your license unless the clerk finds probable cause in a complaint that was at the hearing stage at the district court. That's something they can't do. If you're the licensing authority and you're given all of the responsibility that's associated with being a licensing authority in one of these municipalities, you have to wear that and you have to explain it. And you can't give it to somebody else to make that decision. You have that conversation politely with the licensing authority, and you say, "This, the method by which you went about revoking this license is not appropriate." Sometimes the license comes back under those circumstances. So that being said, I was asked to address the sort of common issues that occur either when you practice and clients come to you, or when you're at a cocktail party over the holidays and somebody has a question or an issue, and
somebody has a gun.
you frequently find that these are the kinds of things that, because you have a bar card, people assume that you know, and you're going to be asked or pressed into service to make some sort of a sidebar judgment on the sidewalk because this person just moved into town, or this person is traveling, or how do I get my bird gun out to Montana because I want to hunt? And those are the kinds of things that that are fraught with terror. If you don't know the statute, sometimes the penalties are severe. And I think, and I've long thought, that one of the most dangerous things that a person can do with a firearm is travel. I think if you plan to go anywhere with a firearm, you're taking a level of risk that I don't think is properly apprehended by the people who undertake it on a regular basis. Otherwise, law-abiding, upstanding citizens can take their property across state lines. They can take it from municipality to municipality. There's very little concern, and there's very little possibility for it to rebound or for them to end up in jail. That's not the case with firearms. And so if you pay attention to the statutes, particularly the federal statutes, you may say to me, counsel, I don't understand. Certainly the federal protection of firearm owners, owners of firearms statute
would protect my client if they decided to travel with a gun, right? FOPA, we call it. And it's as kindly named a statute as you'll ever likely to see, and it's absolutely ineffective under many, many circumstances and very scary. That statute is in my materials. You'll find it there. It's a federal statute that says I am permitted as a firearm owner to travel from a state in which I have the right to possess to a state in which I have a right to possess, through states in which I do not have a right to possess, and I can't be deterred, I can't be bothered, I can't be arrested, as long as I keep my firearm locked, unloaded, in the trunk of my car. I can't have it in the glove box, I can't have it in the center console, I can't have it all of the places that people have it when they're not supposed to have a firearm around. But if I do that, the federal law says that I'm permitted to travel from state to state with that firearm as long as my destination is a state in which I have the right to carry that firearm. What you'll see if you look in my materials is you'll see some federal cases which I pulled out, and there's a little sort of a chronology that I've attached there. The things that are highlighted in that chronology are things that are included in the materials. So you'll see, for instance, in Taraco in 2010, this is a federal case in which, and it's from the it's from the New York District, and the cases that I chose are from the New York District because those are the scariest cases, quite frankly. We have similar cases in all the districts, but New York is the scariest one. Taraco versus the Port Authority of New York. This is the case that stands for the proposition that despite the fact that FOPA tells me I can travel from A, where I'm legal, to B, where I'm legal, through C, D, and E, where I'm not legal, there is no federal right if I'm stopped and arrested for the possession of a firearm that under New York law I'm not permitted to hold. So I have a firearm, I have it locked, it's in my vehicle. In the Taraco case, it's on a plane. The plane flies in, I'm going to get my firearm, which I've locked and loaded, and identified and packaged, and it's being sent by air. I pick up my gun, I'm going to put it in my car, and I'm going to drive it to a place where I'm licensed to do some target shooting. I'm a competitive shooter. And Taraco stands for the prospect that I can be stopped, they have probable cause to arrest me, they can seize my firearm, even though there's a federal statute that protects me, because it's a violation of their state law. And in New York City, the city has municipal laws that are more burdensome still. You'll see also in 2013, the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs versus the Port Authority of New York. Same problem. You want to come in and compete at the New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Club. How do you get your gun in there? FOPA is supposed to protect me, but it doesn't. And there is a standing policy at the Port Authority airports where if I bring my gun locked, unloaded, ready to ship, I take it out of my car and I carry it into the airport and I say, I want to check this through to wherever I'm going, the first thing they do is they call the Port Authority police. The Port Authority police ask me if I have a license to have it in New York City. I don't. I have my copy of 926A, right? This is my Firearm Owners Protection Act. The police officers are not charged with knowing it. They're not charged with ignoring it when they do know it. They will take your gun, they will lock you up, and there is no Section 1983 federal right of recovery under those circumstances because it was deemed that they had probable cause to do that. So, The question is, how can that survive? How does the federal authority and the state authority have such broad confusion about what it is that they're supposed to be doing? Well, there is a case, and I've attached the petitioner's brief in the materials that I gave you. There is a case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus the City of New York. You seeing a trend? It continues. And the New York City Police Department License Division. This case is scheduled for argument before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's gone through the appellate courts, and I've attached the petitioner's brief to your materials because I think it's very instructive. New York City has a municipal law that requires that if you have a firearm, it has to stay in your house. You can't carry it. Under very certain circumstances, you can have a license to carry, almost never within the municipality of the city of New York. You can only carry that firearm locked and unloaded outside of your home for one purpose under the ordinance, which is to leave your home to go to one of seven, there are only seven, licensed target ranges, gun clubs, in the city, shoot, and then travel back locked and unloaded. That's the only permissible use for a firearm in the city of New York. The petitioner's brief will do a very good job of explaining in 47 pages what we don't have time to talk about today, which is that there are 1,000 reasons that that's wrong, one of which is FOPA. If it's locked and in my trunk and unloaded, I'm supposed to be able to carry it wherever I want to go. New York City says not so much. In fact, if I had another home outside the city of New York, I wouldn't be permitted to take it from my home in New York City to my home in New York State. I have to buy a separate second firearm, which I can keep in the other home, because I can't get this one there. So, that's coming up. The United States Supreme Court is going to hear argument about that in the next term, and as you might imagine, there's about 15, 17 amicus briefs already filed. There's been an attempt by the city of New York to try to moot the case by making some alterations to the ordinance. It's a very interesting piece of litigation. But that demonstrates the difficulty that you have when your client or your family member or your friend says to you, I want to go hunting in Vermont. I want to go to Georgia, and I want to take my gun. How do I do that?
So you're talking about pistols.
I'm talking about both.
Any gun.
Yeah, any firearm. Yeah. Now, if you want to go bird hunting, you've got the same problem. So how do I do that? And the first answer is, if you fly and you check your luggage and you mark it as a gun and you abide by the common carrier restrictions, and you're flying to a place where it's lawful for you to possess the firearm, and you're leaving a place where it's lawful for you to possess the firearm. I've got a Class A. I go to Logan. Logan is in Massachusetts. I'm permitted to carry a firearm. I take my firearm and I give it to the airlines. If a snowstorm comes up and they set that plane down in New York at LaGuardia, under no circumstances am I going to touch that gun. It's mine, and it belongs to me, but I'm not about to be in possession of it. When the airlines comes to me and says, we'll give you a hotel for the night, we're sorry for the inconvenience, we had mechanical problems, here's your luggage, I'm going to hold both hands in the air in front of the video camera and say, I don't know what you're talking about. I gave you the gun, we signed a contract, that gun was going to meet me in Billings, Montana, and that's the next place I'll see that gun. I'm not going to touch it in New York City. And that's just practical advice. You're right. You have the right to carry it. They have the right to ship it. It's a horror show, but when it goes wrong, you're explaining it to some judge who's heard this story 100 times. Judge, all I was trying to get to Billings. I don't know how I ended up in New York, but it didn't seem right to leave the gun in the airport overnight. Taraco says, when the FOPA says in a vehicle locked, they mean in a vehicle. They don't mean carrying it from the vehicle to the airport. They don't mean carrying it from the airport to the vehicle. It has to be in your vehicle to have the protection of FOPA, assuming that the local officers are aware that FOPA offers some protection. Well, what does that mean? I check into a Motel 6 and I have to leave the gun in the trunk of my car out in the parking lot. I can't bring it into the motel room where ostensibly it would be safer and more secure. The FOPA protections, according to Taraco, are only for purposes of the vehicle. And it pays to pay attention to that. Go ahead. You can keep it in a locked, secured, if you have a box in the back of your pickup truck that's locked, you put it in a case, you lock it. I've told clients, take a copy of 926A and tape it to the outside of your firearm box, right? So when the officer reaches in to take it out, he's got to read the federal statute. He's got to, because it's right there. And you're going to want that later, because you're going to need it. So So yes, it has to be in a locked container, and it has to be locked in your vehicle. It can't be in a place that you have access to. So you've got to lock down a toolbox or something in the back of the bed. Go ahead.
So if it's in my SUV in the back, that's not giving me, because I still have access to it?
Yeah, well, what I would do in a circumstance like that, I told clients, put two cases around it. Put a gun case inside a box, lock the box. Right? It just, you want to be able to prove to the best of your ability that it's not accessible to me, the driver, or anyone in the car. Go ahead.
You said as long as you are legal to possess at your destination, you can travel in between states. You said something about stopping at a hotel for the night. Is that now becoming a destination, that state, or is there something
That's a great question, and one that's not answered, I don't think. I don't think the case law tells us that. What if my destination is a round trip? I'm going from my house to Connecticut to shoot birds at Markover, and I'm coming back to the state by the end of the day. But is that something that's covered by FOPA? The law is not exactly clear. I think you can feel reasonably comfortable that as many deficiencies as there are in the interpretation of FOPA, you're probably okay in that score. But New York is very clear. If I take that gun out of my car for any reason to bring it to a more safe, secure location, the inside of my hotel room, I violated the protections of FOPA and I'm not entitled to that gun. So it's a scary world. My other bar admission is in New Hampshire, and I do a fair amount of work up there. And New Hampshire, it's like we're speaking a different language in the Commonwealth. They simply don't understand. New Hampshire has constitutional carry. You do not require a gun license there. As a person who's from out of state, I can get a gun license from New Hampshire simply by applying. And unless I'm federally prohibited, there is no column 2 in New Hampshire. If I'm federally prohibited, I can't have one. Otherwise, I can get one. Why would I get one if I don't need one in New Hampshire? Why apply for firearms licenses in places where you don't need them or intend to use them? The answer is reciprocity. My friend or my family member at the cocktail party is asking me, how do I get my guns from one place to another? Well, the first answer is the more states you're licensed in, the easier it is to travel. And there are states, and the NRA, I think Gun Owners Action League, will show you a map, a reciprocity map. If I get a license in New Hampshire has reciprocity with every state that will give reciprocity to a New Hampshire license. So every state that is that accepts a New Hampshire license, New Hampshire accepts. Not a Massachusetts license. Not New Hampshire's fault. Massachusetts won't give New Hampshire reciprocity. New Hampshire has a statute that's in the materials that says every 5 years, New Hampshire is supposed to go and knock on the door and ask, can we have reciprocity with you? Can our gun owners carry in your state as yours could in ours? And every 5 years, Massachusetts says, nope, not New Hampshire. But New Hampshire asks. So a New Hampshire license is worth something because there are a lot of states in which you can carry on a New Hampshire license. And the Gun Owners Action League or NRA, who has the map, will tell you that I think Utah, perhaps New Mexico. I think maybe the officer could tell me better. Florida?
Florida is the other one.
39 states.
Okay, so Florida.
And they will accept out-of-state applications, surveillance, just like that.
Yep. So there are things that you can do to enhance your chances of being able to travel and use your firearms in the way that you might expect a constitutional right would be adjudicated. New Hampshire has the additional benefit of they have a state constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Their state constitution has a Second Amendment that's part of their constitution, and so that's part of the reason they call it constitutional carry. They also have a right to revolution, so that's not exactly the same as the Commonwealth. Go ahead.
Mike, I got a general question. If you're a resident of Massachusetts with a license to carry, and you want to fly to Billings, and you go down Bradley to fly to Billings, now you drive from Mass to Bradley, you open up your box, they inspect it, they put the tag in it, they see a revolver and two pistols in the box, you close the box, and you fly to wherever, South Dakota, Montana, or someplace out west. Is there a problem driving from Massachusetts to Connecticut?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah, there is.
Yep, there sure is. And there ought not be, because that's what FOPA is supposed to mean, but there absolutely is. And that's, as I say, these are the New York cases because New York is the scariest of all the jurisdiction I'm aware of, but the same problem exists.
They have a heyday in JFK, but almost everybody goes out there.
Well, the JFK, they stop them all the time.
Yeah. And they open their boxes and check them and everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is New Hampshire open carry?
It is.
So do you need, as an out-of-state, as an a non-resident of New Hampshire, if I wanted to conceal carry in New Hampshire, do I need to apply for my license in that case?
The statute in New Hampshire, and it's in your materials, at page 96 on my Bates stamps, the statute in New Hampshire is a shall issue no license statute. So if I'm not a prohibited person, I can carry. And they're serious about it because I've had cases up there. I had a client who was, he fell asleep in his car because he was smoking. And he was smoking the kind of things that make you fall asleep in the car. And that was a misdemeanor after some legal work. That was a misdemeanor. Because it wasn't a felony, they gave him back the gun that he had on the seat while he was smoking in the car. Now, Massachusetts won't do anything like that. Right? It just doesn't work that way.
So it doesn't matter if you're concealing or not.
No, New Hampshire says if you have the right, if you're not a federally prohibited person, you have the right to carry arms in the state of New Hampshire. Now, how you prove that you're not a federally prohibited person when the officer stops you and asks you, that's a different situation. That's a situation where maybe you want to go ahead and get a New Hampshire license as an out-of-state, as an out-of-state person.
So you don't need an address in New Hampshire?
If you're in New Hampshire, you have the right to carry unless you're a prohibited person. That statute is in your materials. It's 159.6. They also say if you want a license, we'll give you one if you're not a prohibited person. So you can use the license, and you may need it, but you don't need it for New Hampshire. Let's see. I want to get to the two matters that you asked me about to add. At the last minute, we had a conversation about a couple of things that are not in the materials. One of the things that people sometimes ask about is how do I store a firearm in my home? In Massachusetts now, how do I store a firearm in my home? If you've got a license to carry, you can carry a firearm on your hip in your house. Or you can store a firearm in accordance with Chapter 269 and the provisions that allow you to store it, which is to say locked in a case or with a trigger lock or a mechanical device that prevents a gun from firing. What you can't do is you can't blend the two. If you have a license to carry and you're in your house, then any gun that's under your control is considered to be lawfully controlled by the person with the LTC. Any gun that is not under the immediate control of the person with the LTC is improperly stored. So even having a license to carry is not sufficient if I answer the door with a gun on my hip and a loaded gun in the nightstand by the bedroom. The loaded gun by the bedroom, that's a violation. And I will get charged. There are plenty of improper storage cases, both in the residences and in vehicles. The other thing that I was asked to at least talk briefly about before I got to the sort of practical stuff was the non-residents. If you're a non-resident of Massachusetts, you can get a license. You don't have to live or work in one of the 351 municipalities. The state police have the responsibility to review your applications and issue either FID cards or Class A LTCs. If you're an out-of-state resident, if you're a legal non-citizen, those people can get licenses, but they have to do the paperwork. Not having a license in Massachusetts is a very serious matter. Chapter 269, which is in your materials, used to be called the Bartley-Fox Act. I'm old enough that I recall that. I recall, I was very young, but I recall driving through New York and coming to Massachusetts and seeing a sign at the gate that said, if you're coming to Massachusetts and if you got a firearm and no license, we will lock you up. And they were serious about it at the time. They took the signs down because it seemed unwelcoming, I suppose, on the turnpike. So the signs don't exist, but the statute exists. That statute is in your materials, and now it's 18 months,
right.
and it's just devastating to somebody who doesn't understand that they're even committing a crime necessarily because of where they're from. So just a few practical things, because I want to leave time for Julie. The first thing to do, if you want to travel with a firearm, just stay the hell out of New York, right? Or don't admit that it's your firearm if they try to hand it to you at the airport, because nothing good is going to happen. It's all going to be bad. If you are an attorney who represents corporations, or I represent nonprofits and churches, and a pastor gets called to a church in Massachusetts from Birmingham or Arkansas or a place where it is very routine to have firearms in your luggage, when that person comes up here, they need to understand, the church needs to understand, the corporation needs to understand, they've got 60 days to get that person licensed before all of the penalties that we've talked about apply. And I've included two cases from 2019 in the materials, Commonwealth versus Harris and Commonwealth versus Paul, which are cases that stand for the proposition that after 60 days, your luck has run out. If you've got a firearm in Massachusetts and you've moved to the Commonwealth, you've got 60 days to get it right, or you have to get rid of the gun until you do get it right. Now, for the purposes of argument, one of these cases is a sort of a homeless individual who was sort of camping on the border between Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and when a police officer stopped to tell him that he couldn't just walk along the highway, he told the police officer that he was working for Homeland Security and his job was above his clearance. He wasn't going to be able to talk to him. So the police officer said, well, I'll be happy to give you a ride down to the gas station or the next exit or whatever you're looking for. Is there anything valuable in your backpack? He had a little tent and he had a backpack. And he said, well, that's where I keep my handgun. And the police officer said, okay, well, we'll have to talk about that some more. So he was, for purposes of this case, he was living in Massachusetts. He'd had 60 days to get himself squared away, and despite his Homeland Security clearance, he was not squared away. So those things are serious, and they're significant, and when it happens to somebody that you represent or somebody that you care about, it can be devastating. But the other thing that I would say, and to go back to what the judge was saying, these cases are not for counsel from outside the area code. I'll say that. If somebody called me and said, I have this issue in North Adams, I would say, I really think that you should find, or I'll help you find, an attorney in North Adams who knows the chief of police in North Adams, the district court in North Adams, because the court of first resort is a licensing authority. And it's happened plenty of times to me, if I can convince that the chief of police that this isn't going to be a career ender for him, then I don't have to stand before the judge and convince him it's not going to be a career ender for him. And so local counsel, I think, is a very practical way of addressing those issues. But pay attention to it in your practices and in the conversations that you have that are even unrelated to the areas in which you practice, because the consequences are severe, and it's a dangerous world.
I just to clear up New York City is kind of sort of in its own little world. But if you want to leave here with one gun to go to upstate New York and you already have a hunting license, you can do that.
If you have permission, if you have the right to carry whatever it is you're carrying, when you're stopped by whoever it is that stops you at that location, then you should be okay. The problem is that the FOPA is designed to give me security as a gun owner from X to Y without worrying about what's in the middle.
Exactly.
And if I land at the Port Authority instead of in upstate New York, if I don't fly to Buffalo, right, if I get put down in LaGuardia for whatever reason,
yeah,
now I've got a serious
problem.
Yeah.
Right. But just so people are clear, the rifle and shotgun, if you have a hunting license to go hunt in that state, you could drive from here upstate New York.
I'll defer to you on that as a New York law.
Just
to keep in mind something Mike was saying, though, whatever you're transport, it needs to be legal where you are. And I think, you know, there are a lot of restrictions in Massachusetts. I don't think it really matters for us as people, or maybe you all as lawyers in Massachusetts, but there may be target rifles that are illegal in Massachusetts for a variety of reasons.
That's an excellent point.
So, and that's not...
There's good. A roster.
Right. So, and that creates its own set of problems.
For the most part, my experience has been people just get into a jam because they don't know. That's the majority of the cases. I mean, I've represented some people who knew or should have known and had bad intentions, but that's not the majority of the people.
Presuming you have the full protection of FOPA in the state you're traversing with the firearms that you're carrying, how does FOPA protect you, if at all, when you're carrying a magazine in a state that has a magazine capacity limit or certain restrictions on ammo in New Jersey?
FOPA is, you'll see it in your materials, FOPA is one paragraph long. And what it says and what it's supposed to mean is, if it's legal where I left and legal where I am going, then as long as it's boxed and unloaded and inaccessible, it should be legal along the way. And as we've discussed, there are a lot of problems with that. So yes, it can be a handgun that's not on the Massachusetts roster because the clip holds too many rounds.
What about the actual feeding device?
The feeding device or, for example, New Jersey, which bars civilians from having ejaculate hollow points. Are those items protected by FOPA?
In fact, hollow points are identified specifically in the second case, in the New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Club case, as material that people were bringing in for the purposes of the competition, expecting the protection of FOPA, and the state, the federal court in that district said, you don't get it. You're not allowed it. Make sure I get all my practical considerations here, because I want you to have this. If you check your firearms, don't take interim possession of the firearms in anywhere. You paid them to get them to where you're going. Make them do that. Apply for out-of-state firearms licenses. If you're stopped on the road, maybe you can. If you're stopped on the road and you've taped your copy of FOPA to the outside of your gun case, and it's in the back of your car in the trunk, and the case is locked and the trunk is locked, and the gun is unloaded, and you've done the best you can to comply with the federal law and the state law of whatever state you're in, and the officer comes up and ask me a few pleasant questions, as they often do, just to start a conversation. My suggestion is use your discretion before you tell anybody what's in the trunk. Is that fair?
I suppose. I was actually going to touch upon that, but we ran out of time. One of the things that is an issue here in Massachusetts is there's really no standard protocol in police training or anything like that on how to react with the how to react to somebody who's either carrying or in possession. Certainly under the FOPA instance, it's not well known amongst police officers that federal protection, but there's no standard. Like some states have a shall declare, meaning if you're carrying, so you're carrying on a reciprocity from another state and you get pulled over. I believe Maine, for example, requires that if you're constitutionally carrying without a permit, that you declare to the officer upon your stop, hey, officer, just so you're aware, I am carrying a firearm on my right hip. Massachusetts has no such standard. Generally, my feeling is, if I'm in Massachusetts and they have a license, I'm generally not so concerned about them. And I've said to people before, look, you keep yours holstered, I'll keep my holster, we'll be cool. and usually that's plenty. But, you know, again, it's officer's discretion. I don't think an officer would be out of bounds to have you step out of the car and unload the firearm while he conducts the stop and then gives it back to you at the conclusion.
But for the client or for the family member or friend, you just have to read the room. You have to be able to figure out whether this is a good time to bring that up or not. And if you've got some social skills, it doesn't have to be too scary for everybody. But I think it's I'd say this: the officers do get training on probable cause, And now in Massachusetts, probable cause does not include the smell of fresh or burnt marijuana. Right? That's as a legal matter, I can't. The smell of marijuana doesn't entitle the officer to do anything that he's not otherwise entitled to do, meaning he may have to get a search warrant. But if I tell the officer that I have a firearm, the probable cause standard seems to drop to the point where, and understandably for the officer's safety and for all of the reasons that we read in the decisions, the fact that I have a firearm is not, it's a legal substance, as is marijuana in Massachusetts, but New York says the officer has probable cause to take the firearm away from you despite FOPA. So I'm federally permitted, I'm not permitted by the state, so New York takes it away. Massachusetts officers are faced with the same problem.
Although in Mass, the case law is that the possession of a firearm does not provide probable cause. So if the officer sees a firearm, that does not give them probable cause to do something. But they may be able to do an FIO, or they may talk to the person or do whatever, and things may escalate, but the presence of the weapon doesn't mean that it's an illegal weapon, unless they, let's say they know the person, they know the person doesn't have a license.
But the federal case law is different. That creates probable cause. In Taraco, it creates probable cause, which does two things. It allows the officer to search for the weapon, and it prevents you from being able to recover in a 1983 action in the federal court for damages if you get locked up.
My experience in 30 years of doing police work and supervising many police officers is that most police officers take it from, I got probable cause, but somebody else sorted out.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Anything else? Did I use up your...